Hi, my name is Angelica Ramos, and I am a curator with the Journal of the Plague Year COVID-19 Archive Project at Arizona State University. Today's date is July 15th, 2021, and the time is 11:03 Mountain Standard Time. Today, I will be interviewing Dr. Rhodes about her COVID-19 experience. To start, can you please state your full name, your location, and current time?
Sure. My name is Marissa Christman Rhodes, and I am in Buffalo, New York, and the time here locally is 2:03 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
I also need to ask for your consent to record this interview with the purpose of saving it into the JOPTI archival project at ASU.
I consent.
Describe the moment you first learned about COVID and how it made you feel.
So when I first learned about COVID, I mean, I follow the news pretty closely, and I especially was at that time. So I heard about it when it was still in Wuhan, and, you know, I didn't think all that much of it. I thought of it as being sort of similar to SARS, which didn't really impact me personally at all when that happened in the earlier 2000s. So I thought of it like that when I first heard of it. But when I first heard of it being in the United States and epidemiologists being worried about it, I was a visiting professor at Niagara University in Niagara Falls, New York. And I was actually teaching a history of medicine and public health class. And we had all these plans to actually do like play board games about the influenza pandemic and things like that. And we had to cancel them because we had a real pandemic. So it was kind of weird. I remember my students being really concerned and asking me, I mean, is it possible that they're actually going to cancel in-person class? And I remember thinking that it didn't seem like that was even a possibility. It didn't, I had never experienced anything like this in my life. So based on my experience, they came to me and said, like, what do you think is going to happen? And I said, I really can't imagine that's going to happen, that we're going to not have class in person anymore. And that we're all going to be like on lockdown in our homes, that like, I can't imagine that will actually be the case. But I was wrong. And that's exactly what happened. And a couple of days after I had this conversation with my students, that happened. We also had to, we had a trip planned to go to this particular class. We had a trip to go to the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia, which is a medical museum. And I had just bought all the tickets and I had just done all of that planning, and they were so excited. And they were going to write their final papers about their trip, kind of evaluating their trip. And I had just purchased all that stuff and I had to cancel it. And I, you know, at first I thought there's no way I'm going to have to cancel this trip that's in a month or whatever because of this. Like, that's crazy. There's no way that that's possible. 100% I had to cancel it by the end of that week. I think the week of March 13th or so in 2020. So that was my experience of my first experience of COVID.
That's really interesting to hear how your career was affected, but I wanted to gear it more towards your experience as a mother. So I wanted to get into that. How many children do you have and how old are they?
Sure. So I have three children right now. My oldest is 9. My middle child is going to be 6 next week. And then I have a 6-month-old.
What was prenatal care like during COVID?
So prenatal care was interesting because I actually go to a birthing center. I do out of hospital births. I see an OB, and she also works with midwives, but she has a birthing center, a freestanding birthing center. It's one of, I think, 2 in New York State, where you give birth outside of the hospital in a kind of nice and friendly environment. And I did that with my son. So I plan to do that with this baby. But the difference was that with my son, we stuck to a centering model of care. So we would have, instead of having our individual OB appointments, we would meet every 2 weeks at the OB's office in the evening with our partners, sometimes with our kids as well. And we would kind of be taken back one by one to be weighed for, you know, health issues to be discussed, all the things you would do in a normal OB appointment, while everyone else kind of chatted and got some of that social emotional development going, you know, that is so important, I think, when you're pregnant. I was one of the only people in that centering group that had already had a child, and everyone else was a first-time mom. So it was really interesting because they were all like, you know, saying like, well, I'm going to parent my kid like this and I'm going to do it like this. And I was like, okay, well, you don't have kids yet, but whatever, you know? So that was interesting. That all went away. So during COVID, they kind of abolished, the centering model of care and it went back to individual appointments. It's kind of nice in the sense that you kind of have your doctor's undivided attention, I guess, but you don't have that same socialization, or the same, you know, biweekly, support that you would get in a centering group. And, you know, with a centering group that I had with my son, you know, once our babies were all born, we stayed in touch, our kids all hang out, we know each other. It kind of forms like a little cohort for you, which I think is really important, especially if you're a first time mom. And this time, you know, that I didn't have that option. So it was sort of isolating. And I remember feeling really bad for women who were becoming moms for the first time during COVID because they wouldn't get to experience that.
What was it like giving birth during COVID? And was there anything positive about that experience?
So my birth story with my third was kind of interesting. With my first two, I had very fast labors, very fast unmedicated labors. The second one was in a birth center. I gave birth to him in a tub and, you know, I was not in labor for very long. And everything went well. With this baby, something similar happened. My water actually broke before I went into labor, which had never happened to me before. So that was different, but she came very, very fast. So like my water broke and then like a couple hours later, I was pushing her out. And I mean, anyone who's a mom knows that that is very quick. And so I gave birth to her at the birth center on a birthing stool. It was like, you know, zero intervention. I mean, my OB was there obviously, but I had no interventions or anything. But I ended up losing a lot of blood, which is one of the complications that can happen when you give birth. And every now and then women have to transfer from the birthing center to the hospital if they need a blood transfusion. Mine wasn't so bad that I needed a transfusion. I was okay. But my daughter was not really okay. She was having trouble breathing. And because I gave birth to her so quickly, she did not, there wasn't time for her to be in the birth canal for all of her, all of the gunk that's inside of their body and their lungs. It usually gets squeezed out by contractions when they're in the birth canal, but she wasn't there long enough and I didn't have enough contractions. I wasn't in labor for long enough for that to happen. So it was called transient tachypnea of the newborn and she was unable to breathe well. So after a few hours of giving her oxygen and kind of monitoring her, my OB asked me if she could call in the neonatal emergency team from our local children's hospital. And I said, yes, knowing though that if they came out, they were going to admit her and she would be in the hospital and she would be a NICU baby. And that I would have to be spending all these days during the COVID pandemic in the hospital. But you know, better safe than sorry, I figured. So I gave consent and, they came and picked her up and they put her in an incubator, hooked her up to all these things. and took her in an ambulance to the hospital without me and my husband. So I had to say goodbye to my baby, who was like a few hours old. That's so rare at the birthing center. You go home after a couple hours and you bring your baby home with you. So you're never separated from them. And I didn't have that option this time. So I was very weak because I had lost a lot of blood, but my OB helped me shower and get dressed, and my husband helped me, and they took me in a wheelchair to the car, and then we went to the hospital to meet the baby there. While I was birthing at the birthing center for the very short time that I was there, I did not wear a mask, but all of the people who were in the room with me did wear a mask, including my husband. One of the biggest differences, aside from the prenatal care, because of COVID, was that my mom was unable to attend the birth. She had been there for the birth of both of my other kids and was sort of like almost like a birth coach to me. My husband was also there, and I also had doulas for at least two of the three births. So I had a lot of people there, and that was fine with me. That's what I liked. But my mom wasn't able to come, and she was heartbroken about that. She brought it up all the time when I was pregnant. Well, I'm not going to get to be able to be there. And she was totally devastated by that. And that devastation that she had because she couldn't be there was compounded by the fact that now that my baby was admitted into the NICU, she wasn't going to be able to see her for weeks. Nobody in the NICU, because of COVID, there were no visitors allowed. There were, masked 24/7. So I had to sleep in a mask, and my husband had to sleep in a mask. We stayed there and slept there every day for a week. And we never took our mask off. I had just given birth and lost a lot of blood. So that was really difficult because I couldn't eat or drink regularly because I couldn't eat or drink in the room, because then I would have to take my mask off. So my husband had to, I couldn't quite walk because of my blood loss. So my husband had to put me in a wheelchair and wheel me to like a designated eating area in the hospital, which was literally all the way across the hospital. Same thing with the bathroom. He had to wheel me. There was no bathroom in the room. He had to wheel me, to a bathroom. And so I could eat, drink, whatever. So I was super dehydrated, super underfed for those few days following the birth. And it was just extra sad because with all my other kids, within an hour or two of them being born, or even while they were being born, our closest family members would meet them. And with this one, she was around for like a week and nobody had met her still. Should I keep going, or what's your next question about? Because I have more things to share, but.
My next question is about motherhood during the pandemic. So what was it after you brought a baby home, and just the difference between bringing a baby home during COVID and bringing your first two babies home?
Okay. So a couple things that I wanted to add about the NICU then, before I talk about bringing the kids home, was that because of COVID, I think people and my baby who had breathing issues, the breathing issues were unrelated to COVID. But because of COVID, everyone I think was very on edge and being extra cautious. One of the results for that for a family like me was that because they were being extra cautious, nurses and doctors and everybody at the residence and everybody at the NICU refused to let my baby eat for a few days, because the idea was that if she's having breathing issues and she has something in her stomach, whenever you have something in your stomach, it pushes on your diaphragm and that can impede breathing. So the idea is that she was having breathing issues. So they didn't want to possibly compound those issues. So they wouldn't let me feed her. And that was, they were just trying to be absolutely as, kind of conservative and cautious as possible. It was really, really difficult to not feed my baby. She would scream and scream and scream for hours on end. And then they would come in and say, oh, well, I'm looking at her heart monitor and her breathing rates, and they're all elevated for the past few hours. And I'm like, yeah, because she's starving, so she's screaming. And then they're like, well, because her heart rate and her breathing rate have elevated, we're going to have to put off feeding her even more, you know, because they were, because they're looking at the numbers. They're not really in there like with the baby 24/7. They're looking at monitored numbers that are kind of spit out at their desk. And so that was really difficult. And we felt like we were in this endless cycle of interventions, that one intervention would lead to another intervention would lead to another one. And it was really difficult to get out of those interventions. Eventually, I kind of advocated for myself and for my baby. And I was like, we need to feed this freaking baby. She's starving. And the nurse who I had agreed and even said, the whole time I was here, the only time her heart rate was elevated was when she was screaming because she woke up and was hungry. And the only time it wasn't elevated was when she was sleeping because she wasn't awake to be hungry. So eventually they did let me feed her. But for the first like 3 days, I couldn't feed her. And that was really, really difficult. And some of the nurses, you know, I said, is this typical? And they said, no, with like full term normal weight babies, they're not normally this cautious. But because of COVID and because we're in a hospital, there's a possibility this baby could get COVID. There's a possibility the breathing issues could get worse. They want to take every precaution. So there's little things like that that people don't really realize that really impact people's life during a pandemic, I think. Just small things like, you know, me having my milk come in and I'm having to pump all the time and I'm in the NICU and I can't feed my baby who was literally starving. So and then they started with some of the, well, she's losing weight. It's like, well, you're not letting me feed her. You know, that kind of thing. So there was a lot of conflict there and it was a ton of turmoil. So bringing the baby home, to answer the question that you posed a few minutes ago, bringing the baby home was extra complicated because while I was in the hospital, my children were staying with my mom and my sister. I have a sister who's 18 who lives at home. And while we were in the NICU, I think the day before we got released, my sister tested positive for COVID and my kids were with her in the house. She has kind of her own little apartment in the basement. So it's not like they weren't like next to her all day, every day, but they definitely interacted with her and then they were in the same house as her. So then came the choice of, okay, well, I had this baby a week ago. She was in the NICU for a week. Do I tell my kids who I haven't seen for a week, you know, and they were 5 and 9, desperate to see me, desperate to see the baby. They had never met her. Desperate to see their dad, desperate to sleep at home, as all little kids are. Do I tell them, you have to stay at grandma's house for 2 weeks, 2 more weeks now, because you've been exposed to COVID? Or do I take that risk and let them come home? For me, the decision was not difficult. I let them come home and I took that risk. And probably a lot of people would judge me for that. But I guess for me, I had been away from them for too long. And I just could, they were also in school and they were also missing a bunch of school. They were missing, my son was missing his speech therapy. There was all of these things going on that, that I needed to kind of pull my life back together. And if that wasn't going to happen for another 2 weeks, I felt like I would lose my mind. So I let them come home. And just monitored them for symptoms. My mom, who also lives with my sister and who is actually high risk, did not contract COVID despite living with my sister and being much closer to her. And neither did my kids. I got them tested a few times just to be sure. But yeah, so I took that risk. And sometimes I feel guilty about it because I think on paper, that's probably wasn't the right decision. But in my actual real life, it was the only thing I could have done. So that was hard. Because my mom was exposed to COVID, and she entered a quarantine. This is at the point in COVID, this is January of 2021. This is at the point where there are very strict quarantine rules. because my mom was in the household with someone who tested positive. She could not see my daughter for another 2 weeks. So she didn't meet my daughter until she was maybe 3 weeks old. And that was heartbreaking for her because with my other kids, she was there when they were born. And so that was difficult. My sister didn't meet my daughter until maybe a month after she was born. And our whole life sort of, because of that NICU stay, our whole life just sort of started kind of falling apart. I actually started teaching a class the day before I gave birth at ASU. It was a history podcasting class. It started on the 11th and then on the 12th, I gave birth. So in the NICU, I was running the class, grading all this stuff. And then I was doing all that stuff also when I came home. And that was a lot. Another fallout thing from this situation is that because of our NICU stay and because of COVID, my son, who was in speech therapy classes, he has a severe speech delay. He had to miss a couple speech classes because I was in the NICU. And also because he had to miss speech because of that exposure from having been in the same house as my sister. He also had to miss a week of school, which included speech. So he missed speech and things like that. A couple months later, after I thought we'd gotten our life together, he had his evaluation, his special ed evaluation. And I had been told that he was denied for summer services because he missed some speech classes in the spring. And the reason he missed them is because I was in the NICU with the baby and because he was exposed to COVID immediately after that. And so he missed a couple in a row. And I cried for days when I found this out because I was like, oh my God, like my, you know, he's, you know, desperately needs help. He's, you know, falling behind in school. His speech is not improving. And instead of giving him help, the district is kind of punishing us for him missing those classes. You know what I mean? It was really hard to take. I ended up like going on the warpath and calling everybody I could. And I ended up getting him approved for summer services. So, you know, it worked out in the end, but it took about 5 months to work it out. but that was kind of another example of these small kind of cascading problems that happen because of the pandemic and because of, you know, missed school and missed speech. A lot of people will say, oh, like, you know, don't worry about the kids missing. You know, they're not going to fall behind. You know, they're learning different things. They'll catch up. Kids are resilient. All that stuff is true. But when you have a kid who's in special ed and has a speech impediment, missing out on those therapies is really crucial to their development as a human. And he was at a point where we were starting to worry that he was going to have a speech impediment forever because he is getting old enough now and it's not improving. So when people say things like that, there's a lot of like things floating on Facebook, like, don't worry about the kids, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's true. If you have a typical kid, but if you have a kid who has issues, then COVID has really thrown people through for the loop, you know? I think that was all I had to say about that.
How did COVID change your day-to-day routine?
It made it really difficult because I live in New York State, and in New York State, they suspended in-person school for a really long time. New York State, our governor Cuomo was very cautious about it, very, almost authoritarian, like, hey, we're doing this. Everybody shut up. This is what we're going to do. I appreciated it because I knew how important that kind of attitude was during, a pandemic, but a lot of people, hate him for that. But the result of that is that our kids were out of school a lot longer than most kids were. So my kids left school in March of 2020 and did not go back until the winter of 20 March. Yeah, they didn't go back until almost a year. They had been out, you know, of school for almost a year. So they were at home, and as I'm sure lots of other mothers and fathers know, and guardians and caretakers, everybody who's taking care of kids, it takes so much effort on the parents' part to do remote schooling. So I had a kindergartner and a third grader, and I had to help them with schooling, especially the kindergartner. I had to sit there with him the whole time, have all the supplies ready every day. I got a message from a teacher every day, hey, we need this, this, and this. So then every morning I'd get up, get the supplies ready. I had to get my kids out of bed, and it was hard with my youngest. He was my youngest at the time because I was pregnant. He didn't want to get up, didn't understand why he had to get dressed or brush his teeth or like do anything that humans do. Cause he's like, well, I'm not going to school. And I'm like, well, you know, you have to, that's just the rule. It was literally one of the rules for their school. So every single thing was a fight with him, every single thing. My daughter was okay. He was really, really, really difficult. Everything, he wouldn't eat, he wouldn't brush his teeth, he wouldn't go to sleep, he wouldn't, wash his face, he wouldn't take a bath, he wouldn't get dressed, he wouldn't brush his hair, he would not do anything. And I think it was him just sort of looking for something to control, I guess, because, you know, everything just seemed so out of control. So I tried to be really gentle with him. But what my day looked like was, yes, getting them ready for school. Then I helped them with school till noon. And then we all ate lunch. And then I started working because I'm in Eastern and my job is in Mountain Standard Time and they don't observe daylight savings. So they're 3 hours behind me most of the time. So their meetings at ASU and stuff would start at 9 their time, noon my time. And so by that time, the kids were done. I was done with, you know, teaching the kids. And then I would usually work from like 12 to 6 or 8. In the day. So in a way it worked out. But that also meant that my kids just ran wild, from 12 to 6. My husband worked, he works at a grocery store and they're always understaffed. So COVID meant that he needed to work more hours and more days than ever before. And so my day was, yeah, just being interrupted 500 times while I'm working to get snacks and milk for the kids. Just working and trying to keep them out of the Zoom camera range and, just trying to make sure that I didn't ignore them, but also having to get my work done because I'm getting paid to do this. All of that sort of difficult stuff. That's kind of what my day-to-day was like. And for a lot of that, I was pregnant and then I gave birth in January of 2021. And then I did all that plus a baby. thankfully, my kids went back full time, I think in April of this year. My kids were out of, when they went back, they initially went back 2 days a week and that kind of thing, like a hybrid thing, but they didn't go back full time until over a year after they had left school. And that helped a ton. That was awesome because instead of being teacher and parent during the day, I could focus on getting work done, put the baby in the baby carrier, get some of my work done, and then have some of my evening to myself sometimes. So that was really nice. It was difficult to always remember to have their masks washed. That was like a big thing. No matter how many masks we buy, we lose all of them, at least the kid ones. So every night I'd be like running around like, where's a mask? Where's a mask? I need to hand wash it or I need to, you know, whatever. It was just always, it just adds an extra step to everything. And right now, now that COVID is sort of winding down in my neck of the woods, it's not everywhere, but we have a really, really high, like an 80% vaccination rate in my county. My kids don't have to wear masks anymore to school. Nobody has to wear masks anywhere. There really aren't any precautions that are mandated. And it's really cool because our rates are still really low. We only have like a dozen people that have COVID in the whole county right now. So now my days are much more normal. But since it's summer, once again, I'm working all summer. I have the baby. My husband's working constantly and my kids are home. So, but at least I'm not, failing it helping them study and stuff. At least like they don't have schoolwork to do. So at least if they just run around like wild children, then it's more okay, I guess.
I think you already touched on my next two questions, but I'll skim through them just in case you had something else to add. What were the biggest challenges you faced during COVID, and how was your mental and physical health affected?
The biggest challenges did you say? It cut out right when you said that, so I didn't
hear. Oh, yeah, sorry. What were the biggest challenges you faced due to COVID, and did COVID affect your mental or physical health?
So the biggest challenges was just how to manage my life, how to work and do laundry and be a mom and a teacher and a college professor and a curatorial lead at an archive and a podcaster and a friend and a wife and all of those things, how to do all of those things at once and not have any life separation whatsoever. I think that's the most challenging thing. You know, instead of going to work for 8 hours and then coming home, I have to, you know, I've been answering emails 24/7, you know, every single day, because I don't ever get a solid 8 hours to sit down and do work. So then my work ends up being spread out and my kids are, you know, up my butt every second. That lack of separation and having to do all of those things at once is definitely the most challenging. And 100% my mental health suffered because of COVID. I always really struggle with pregnancy anyway. My last two pregnancies were on the difficult side. I had gestational diabetes and I have really bad scoliosis. So I have a lot of musculoskeletal problems that happen when I'm pregnant. Nothing that puts the baby in danger, but just makes it painful for me. So pregnancy is always difficult for me, but pregnancy during COVID was even worse. I honestly think that I laid in my bed almost every day, all day. You know, it was, very isolating. I had friends who didn't see me even once the whole time I was pregnant and now are just meeting my baby now. Friends who I talk to every day. It's very strange. And so they see me and they're like, it's like you didn't even have a baby, because the last time they saw me, I wasn't pregnant yet. And now I have, you know, a 6-month-old. So, you know, I think my friendships took a huge sort of dip, and it, you know, it's just really difficult to maintain those relationships remotely. It's not that you can't. I did, like I said, I text with my friends every day and have group texts and Facebook messages or whatever. But it's just not the same. I'm a very social person and I get my energy from other people and I feel better with my life when I'm not home all the time. I'm not a homebody. I'm more of a out and about kind of person. So being home and being pregnant and in pain, not being able to eat any food that I wanted because of the gestational diabetes, it was miserable. I think having a newborn was very good for my soul. And it really, I'm so glad that I had her when I did, because I could just be at home, you know, on lockdown and just sit here and cuddle with my little newborn all day, every day. And nobody could say anything about it because I couldn't go anywhere because we weren't supposed to be going places. So I think that in many ways, not to be dramatic, but like kind of saved me or sort of helped me to recover from those darker days when I was pregnant and when the pandemic was at its worst. And I have to say, it's been a huge weight off my shoulders since Biden won the election. honestly, having Donald Trump as a president was really, really chaotic. And I feel like I have like adrenaline exhaustion or whatever it's called, like where you're just like on it all day, every day, and you just sort of totally lose it. That's how I was, you know, doom scrolling all the time, worrying about what kind of stupid shit he was going to say next. worrying about how him not taking the pandemic seriously would result in more deaths. You know, worrying about my own family members who are Trump supporters who believed that the pandemic wasn't real and then got COVID and then almost died. You know, all of those things, they weighed so heavily on me. I was just worried all the time. So I'm not going to, like, it's not like Biden being elected saved everything or anything like that. There's still a lot of issues. And as soon as Biden was elected, I was like, yes, now I can start criticizing him because I think it's important to criticize people who are in power, because they're the ones who can actually, you know, make some changes. And I think it's important to think critically about everybody. But just the difference in personalities between President Trump and President Biden has been such a relief. And I finally feel like, oh, we have someone who takes the pandemic seriously. We have someone who isn't spreading misinformation and disinformation. We have someone who, you know, wants to get relief money out to families, things like that. Just really the policy specifics that Biden has brought to the White House have taken a huge weight off my shoulders. Don't get me wrong, I'm still doom scrolling. I'm still pissed off about everybody in Congress. I still hate all the politicians. I still, you know, am active and upset and politically woke, I guess. But it's not as chaotic, I think, as it was.
Going back to, you mentioned a little bit the communication you had with your friends over social media and texting. How did COVID limit the kind of support you had after you had your baby?
Yeah, so it was difficult because just every time someone was exposed to COVID, they couldn't be around for 2 weeks. My mom was exposed once when my sister got it. She was exposed another time, I think by a friend, and she couldn't come then. And that ruined everything because she was the only one that I had with my husband working so much, also because of COVID, because he worked at a grocery store. With my husband working so much, she was like all I had. So she had to keep, you know, quarantining herself and not seeing anybody. And suddenly I have 5 meetings and a crying baby and 2 kids at home with me. See, she's like, she's on cue. Could you hear her just now? She's on my back. And it made the day 10 times more stressful. It made me worry about how professional I would seem if I had kids crawling all over me at every meeting I have at work, you know. It really, give her a pacifier. Let's see if she'll calm down. You know, it was a lot of pressure. So I think that ripple effect is something that I want to revisit too, is that every time that someone was exposed and had to quarantine, every single person who was counting on them in their life lost that, you know, lost their help, sometimes their money, their support, their love, their presence. They lost something every time that happened. And my mom, I think, is still grieving for the fact that she didn't watch this baby be born. And I think people, you know, obviously there's a grief for lives that were lost, which is horrible. But I think a lot of people are also grieving for, you know, relationships that have ended now because of the pandemic, ways of life that have ended for them. And yeah, I think, and just sort of the way things used to be. And there's this kind of feeling that nothing will ever really be the same again. My husband just had to start, he just stopped wearing masks at work a week ago. And he was texting me and he's like, I'm having so much anxiety because he suddenly had to have no mask. And he was kind of freaking out about it. And weirdly, he kept saying that he never really knew what any of his coworkers looked like because he got transferred to a new store during COVID. They all wore masks. He never saw them without masks. So once they all took their masks off, nobody could recognize anybody else. Nobody knew who anybody was. And that was really stressful. And then he felt naked. So he felt like, oh my God, there's something wrong. And his, the one funny thing that he said about it, sorry, oh my God. The one funny thing that he said about it was that he now realizes that if it's left up to the imagination, he'll always imagine the person's more attractive than they are. And so when he saw people take their masks off, he was like, oh, that's what you look like. And he realized that when they had their masks on, that he filled in the rest of their face with like supermodel faces. And then he was like, oh, you're just regular people. hang on one second. I'm going to pass her off so that we can finish up. And so just pause one sec. I mean, you don't have to actually pause the recording or anything, whatever you want to do. Be right back. Okay, sorry. I just didn't want her to be screaming for the rest. You had two more questions. Did I answer both of them?
Yes, you did. It was just about the support you had when you brought.
I can't hear you. Hang on. Duh. Okay, right. What'd you say?
It was just the question about the support that you had or lack thereof when you brought the baby home.
Yeah, that was. Really difficult, and childcare was really difficult. So I've had to kind of face my fears of being a stay-at-home mom. I think stay-at-home moms are like the most badass people in the world because I think it's so hard to do. And I'm not just saying that in sort of this sort of twee way. I really do think it's super hard. And I don't know that I could do it. But I kind of had to do it anyway. So if one good thing came out of COVID, it might be that I was forced to sort of face my fears of being home all day, every day with my kids, and having that pressure to entertain them and all of that stuff and to get stuff done in the house, but also to enrich their lives and all that pressure that comes with being a stay-at-home mom. I was working full-time from home, so I wasn't exactly a stay-at-home mom, but I still had to do a lot of the stuff stay-at-home moms have to do. And I realized that there's really nothing to be afraid of. It's really, really difficult, but I found ways to enjoy spending time with my kids that I hadn't really experienced before the pandemic. So I guess you can say it's sort of one silver lining.
And my last question for you was, because you already answered the silver lining part, is there anything else you would like to add?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think I covered everything. I'm a talker and that's the way my brain works. So hopefully people can follow it. I guess, yeah, the one thing I would want to say is that I think that it's important to always be reflecting on how COVID has changed us. I think nowadays now that the pandemic is winding down in some places, not in others. And with the Delta variant, it's kind of ramping back up again in a lot of places. But in some places, people are really in a hurry to not talk about COVID at all and to move on and sort of ignore that the trauma that was COVID. And I think that with any traumatic experience, it's really important to reflect on it, at least when you're ready, and to think about how it changed your life. Think about what was and what wasn't in your control. Give yourself some grace, but also give yourself the kind of whatever therapeutic thing you need to kind of move on. That's kind of my one thing, is that I hope that moving forward, that after a brief never wanting to talk about COVID or do anything related to COVID again, I hope that we are kind of all are able, as a country and as like the world, able to kind of look back and reflect I think it would be, it'll be better for us to do that.
All right. Well, I wanted to thank you so much for your time and for allowing us to do this interview.